evening, all.
Evening.
And good evening, good evening. Listeners. And
welcome to Phil Film Corner, Patreon.
Welcome to Phil Corner. That's right. Every week, the beans go to an Indian restaurant with a different man called Phil.
And he eats, we watch him eating the weakest curry on the menu.
The weakest curry. And then we just get his... We just ask him his main three takeaways from it, don't we? His main three.
And the real sadness is we never got to do Prince Philip. We had him booked.
We did have him booked, didn't we? And it was almost, yeah, it was just, all the allegations came out just after that, wasn't it? Because, yeah.
About his involvement in the assassination of Princess Diana.
Sorry, I thought you meant Andrew.
Oh, no. I meant good old dead Prince Philip.
There's no allegations against him. He was a big, tall bastard, and it wasn't alleged, was it? It was a fact, and actually, that's what his medal said on them. It was like tallest bastardus or something like that.
But do you know what, Mike? I think if we had got some Korma in him.
Yeah,
he might have opened up about the Diana thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Because often with Phil Korma, we find that the Phils are sort of quite off their guard, aren't they? Once they've got a bit of Korma in them.
There's something about the combination of a Phil with a Korma, isn't it?
Mm. It's a Phil with a Korma. I mean, yeah, a couple of the old kingfishers doesn't do any harm, does it?
Exactly. No,
with Phil loosens things up.
Yeah, and as much chutney as you can carry, isn't it?
That's chutney is part of it, isn't it?
That's what we offer as well to the film.
Especially also, the spicy, the very spicy sort of lime pickles. I think Phil believes that talking cools his mouth down. It's partly what it is.
Well, that's the thing about Phil's, isn't it? That's why we had the idea initially, wasn't it? That Phil's have us, there's a certain amount of cultural baggage, isn't there, which goes with being a Phil.
Mm.
I think a Phil probably normally wouldn't order a korma, would they? That's why
they wouldn't like to be seen to order a korma. No, which is why we have to book out the restaurant in private.
Yep. I think Philip is one of those names where I don't really associate a kind of person with the name.
Mm, that's quite good.
There's Philips in my family. My grandfather was Philip.
I've got a Philip that I love very dearly.
Yeah. But they're all different kinds of people.
Mm.
Well, you're right. It's a very sort of omnidirectional name, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of spin the Phil. The arrow can land.
Whereas a Herbert or a Trevor or a Steve, you've got an opinion straight away. A Cornelius.
Well, that's why Cornelius Biriani. That was our previous idea, wasn't it? That was a complete disaster, wasn't it? It just didn't.
He's good in the live vol-au-vent scene, Cornelius, but put him in front of a mic and he clams up.
He clams up.
Yeah. In my family at the moment, somebody is going to be having a baby, and they asked their young daughter if she would like to help with coming up with a name for the new baby.
Great shout.
And she was very strident in saying, yes, she wanted to name the baby and that it should be called Gerald. Which it turns out is the name of a giraffe, I think, in Peppa Pig. But that's how they got there.
Oh, wow.
And has that been... Oh, thank God she wasn't a Transformers fan. Optimus.
Gerald, though. I mean, it's not a bad name, but it...
Gerald.
You're kind of on tracks in terms of what your life's going to be like if you're called Gerald.
Yeah. You can try and sex it up with Jerry, can't you?
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Jezza.
I know, but it's a losing battle. The fact is, you're called Gerald. You're going to be clad in cardigans from the age of 14 till death. Aren't you?
Right. Well, this isn't, it turns out, an episode of Phil Korma, and we know that because there's no Phil here.
There's no Phil.
Yeah.
It's just the three of us, and that means it is actually an episode of Film Corner.
Welcome.
And because it's because of that, you won't be hearing the catchphrase if... you've had your fill, so give us back the chutney.
That's when Henry starts wrestling the chutneys back off the fill. It's not really a format point. It just happens every time. Now, before we sort of kick off into Film Corner, let's talk about personal context here. It's the evening.
Yes.
Mm.
I'm drinking a German beer that tastes like coins.
So it's that kind of... battery.
It's been brewed in a boomer's pocket.
It's got a real kind of, back of a watch, kind of, you know, handful of coppers.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of tan.
An old Nissan Micra sort of ashtray.
Perfect. Yeah. And maybe even like taking out the cigarette lighter and just dabbing it on the end of your tongue occasionally.
It's stuff that shouldn't come into contact with the human tongue, isn't it? Your body has no way of dealing with it.
And yet somehow the human can identify that it is, yeah.
It can
we're
identify
with metal here.
That it's metal.
Yeah. Heavy metals.
Heavy metals. But what happens is your immune system just has to wave it through because it's got nothing to fight it with, so it waves it through. So the damage, so you'll be internally alloying.
Yes.
Won't you?
It probably means you should register because I think probably in around 2050 you could be strip mined when we are running low on some of those crucial resources.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I could be eligible for some kind of compensation, but no, strip mined.
No,
it's the needs of the community outweigh.
It'll be strip mining.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Any reparations? Yeah.
Yeah. We need to strip mine you for the iPhone 57. I bought a 12-pack of Bavarian beers at Christmas time in Lidl.
A selection, like a multi-pack selection?
A big cardboard box was a multi-pack selection.
Nice.
From different Bavarian towns.
Lovely.
God, so up your street. When you saw that, must have been a good moment.
It's one of those things, do you ever do this? When you buy something from a shop that's obviously meant to be a gift, it's in a gift box.
Mm.
Yeah.
It is there to be gifted to maybe a brother-in-law you don't know that well, or an uncle who's hard to buy for.
Oh, it's a great panic purchase at that time of year, but it's also like providence that it was there at the time that you were there.
What I mean is, like, do you ever buy yourself something that's obviously a gift, but you just buy it for yourself?
Yes, yeah, so that would be like buying a panettone for yourself, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
So panettone, it's something, it's almost gift-wrapped. It's got sort of ribbon, there'll be ribbon effects in the design. Yeah. There might be an actual ribbon on top of it.
Yeah. And obviously there is a sort of skullduggery scene. There are people who, you know, even today will buy a panettone themselves and just, you know, eat it in their car. in the next street before they go home and not tell their spouse about it.
Plunging their fist into the centre of it.
It's happening. We know it's happening. And it's tragic and it tears families apart.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't buy it for yourself. And you're right. This would have been the perfect gift for you. Had I seen that, I'd have bought that and I'd have dispatched it to you that very day.
Well, happily, I bought it for myself. So I've only got two left. So I'm working my way through it. In general, they've been quite nice, but there's the occasional one that just tastes like a factory floor, and I don't know why.
Is it possible that they're exporting the dregs?
I think it's that, Mike.
Yeah.
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 Keeping the good stuff for themselves.
They've got no ideas, the fools. Is that the kind of thing you want?
I think so.
So that has literally been...
I mean, look at the head on that.
Oh, it's got no head.
No.
Exactly.
That has literally been wrung out of the overalls of a man called Ulf at the end of a hard day's work.
That is dead on arrival, that beer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. God, that is really, really flat looking.
Mm.
That looks like the urine samples of a whole factory for their drug testing.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Ben, you're getting there. You're getting warmer in terms of what's happened. You're working it out for yourself.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's how I am. What are your personal contacts?
I just got a nice cup of tea.
Very nice.
In one of my favourite mugs.
Mike, have you told the listeners about that mug
before?
I don't
think he has.
I don't think I have.
Because I'm a huge fan of this mug. Please talk us through that. So I'll describe it for you.
Yeah.
It's an outdoor garden scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's three, I'd say, people of retirement age.
Yeah.
There's a woman on the left with a nice floral sort of blouse.
Yeah.
White chinos. There's a man in the middle with a sort of stripy T-shirt, yellow baseball cap.
Marks
and Sparks classics, grey chinos.
Mm-hmm. And I'd say slacks rather than chinos.
Slacks, maybe slacks. There's a woman on the right wearing a navy blue T-shirt and grey slacks. She's got specs.
They're having a good time.
I would stake my life on her being called. I would stake my life on her being called Carol. I'd stake my life on it.
It's Carol and Margaret, isn't it?
It's Carol and Margaret, and almost certainly Gerald.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the back of the mug, there's a photo of the same three.
It's not the same three.
Oh, is it not?
No. I think it's the same two elderly people.
Carol is still... Carol and Gerald.
Carol and Gerald
accompanied by someone else, who I think we can assume is Maureen.
I think it might be. Is Maureen one, so the next to a Christmas tree.
The next to a Christmas tree. And there it says, Happy Days.
Happy Days.
So this is a gift mug, which was accidentally sent to us by Snappy Snaps. And I do live with people who aren't bastards. So the first instinct of the household was to immediately contact Snappy Snaps and say, we've got this precious, precious mug meant as a gift. You've sent it to us by mistake. Please, can we? Where do we send it? Do we take it to a Snappy Snaps? And they basically panicked and they said, there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing.
Because mug confidentiality is one of the most sacred oaths that anyone who works at Snappy's Nap signs.
They wouldn't take it back because there's no, I mean, as soon as there's a reference number anywhere, it's destroyed immediately. It couldn't trace it back.
The customer has to believe that the mug is untraceable. It's our founding principle. The same goes for keyrings.
Yeah.
And mouse pads.
So they wouldn't take it back. And of course, you know, there's the modern age where you could, you know, get in touch with Bellingcat or whatever and put it on social media and say, you know, do you know this Carol? But that seemed too easy somehow. And I grew fond of it.
I mean, you could put a call out to all Carols, but there are there are like 40, 50 million Carols alone.
In Exeter, within a 5-mile radius of where I'm sitting.
It's not narrowing it down, yeah.
So I've grown very fond of it. So I was tempted to go full private eye on it and track them down. But then I also, I grew fond of it. And there's the genuine risk that one of the gang isn't with us anymore. And then I turn up on a doorstep somewhere in Sunderland.
You brought back memories of Carol to someone.
I break hearts. I don't know what's happened between Carol and Gerald in the meantime.
Well, it's possible that Gerald, I mean, let's face it, it's quite likely that Maureen and Gerald have murdered Carol.
Well, it's possible.
And that mug was an alibi. It was an alibi mug.
She's obviously got dosh. Do you know what I mean? She carries herself like she's an absolute, I mean, she's a winner all the way
she's
through.
She's got a pretty penny to pull off. What trousers that
could
white?
It be something else? Could it be that Gerald has finally gone to Berlin, made it on the burlesque scene?
Possible.
It could be that this mug was a real last roll of the dice for Gerald in terms of saving the relationship.
Oh, my God, don't say that, Ben.
With which of the two women in his life?
Probably his wife rather than his daughter.
Are we saying that?
It's a good shout. It's a good shout from Ben.
Strong shout, Ben. see, this is one of the reasons I'm not a great detective. I never will be.
Give it time.
Don't give up. So you think that's the daughter? So in the second shot, who's the woman next to the Christmas tree
I think what we've got is we've got an old couple.
Two daughters.
Who are also sisters.
But who are estranged from each other.
Well, yeah, they don't appear in both photographs.
Okay. They haven't got a photo of all four of them.
The question is, who is this mug meant for?
Also, Mike, you know that
Maureen is the granddaughter.
No.
What, so that of her own sister? Jesus Christ.
No wonder they,
so it's basically an
they
incest-
didn't want it sent back.
It's basically an incestuous
This
cult.
Is like a smoking gun. This is Exhibit A. I'm looking at here.
Mike.
This is a Netflix documentary. This mug.
This is horrific. And the irony, and it'll be called Happy Days, and that'll be ironic. Mike, you know the shot where they're on the bench. Are there two of them sitting on a bench, but the one on the right is standing next to the bench, but it's still the same height as them both sat down.
She's hunkering down. Yes. So if you look very, very closely, you can see she's actually standing in a small ditch that she's had to dig herself. And the left hand,
the ditch which will soon carry the remains of her mother.
Exactly. Yes. The left hand is a trowel which she's used to dig the ditch, and it will shortly use to dispatch Carol. In a mere 67 blows.
Oh, God.
I won't be surprised if she'll keep those chinos because they'll almost certainly be a perfect fit.
Well, that'll be like the O.J. Simpson glove moment from from the court case. It's whether she can get the beige chinos on.
If the chinos fit. So just quickly, while updating what we're all up to, I'm wearing Three Bean Salad merch.
Yeah, you've gone full corporate.
And I've got the merch, I've got the Three Bean Salad mug.
I'm going to have to de-jumper as well now.
But I'm doing something that's probably a mistake, which is to keep my energy up. I'm drinking an evening coffee. Uh-oh. Which could come back to haunt me massively in the middle of the night.
Mm.
But I've gone for it.
I'm also low on energy, but I'll get on to why.
Okay.
And that is storytelling.
Oh, lovely. Mm. Really, really lovely. Go on then. You've got us in the palm of your hands, mate.
Well, no, that was I'm throwing forward then to a later moment.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. What did I miss? What did I miss when I was taking my jumper off?
I was just saying that I'm feeling a bit tired, and I'll let you know why later.
Ooh. A bit later. Ooh, a little breadcrumb, narrative breadcrumb. Mm.
But I have put too much weight on it now.
Is it because you've just watched a really long film?
It is a bit too long, isn't it? Okay, let's get on to the film. What's the film called? It's called A Complete Unknown.
By Bob Dylan.
about Bob Dylan.
Featuring,
play the jingle.
Yeah.
Nigel Havers.
Featuring pod favourite, Timothy Chalamet.
Chalamet.
Sleek, glossy hair.
Supple, yet firm musculature.
Take me to the Louvre.
Slender biceps.
Pure thoroughbred.
Chalamet.
Equine tail.
Shins of alabaster.
Top-end monogrammed luggage.
And the neck strength of a hyena.
Chalamet. He's a luxury prince.
Okay, let's start with the cinema circumstances, I'm calling it this week. Right. Your cinema circumstances.
We're talking quite well appointed picture house style cinema.
Lovely.
In Exeter. It's a lovely spot.
Alone?
Saturday matinee.
Okay.
En famille.
Really?
Ooh, the whole famille.
The
whole gang.
That's quite, not to give away too much, but that's quite punishing for a couple of sort of young women, girls.
It had a higher age rating than I think it deserved. And it said it's a 15.
Right.
And nothing, it's not,
but it's not, yeah, it's not.
It's just quite long and maybe a bit long for a.
Yeah, there's no violent heist in the middle that you had never heard about in Bob Dylan's life or anything like
no.
that.
No. And he never had the stomach burst Australian thing never happened to him. So it certainly doesn't feature in the film.
But he did, Mike, challenge the authority of the American state with what he was saying.
He did challenge the authority of the American state.
And some of his lyrics language. Were pretty visceral.
Yeah. And there's also in the reasons for it, because I was investigating this before getting the tickets, that it's genuinely because of the sort of mention of nuclear threat.
That's why it's 15.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why it becomes, why it's
because the Cuban Missile Crisis comes up on the telly.
Yeah.
A bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was incredibly well attended matinee. I'd say if not sold out, very nearly sold out. Us and a bunch of silver tops, basically.
Hmm.
Oh right. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So the Shalom factor wasn't bringing in all the
Shalom wasn't the bums on seats for this one. Well, okay. I mean, I say that, I don't know, I didn't ask, but I'd be quietly astonished if that was the draw.
My cinema circumstances were I was in my local Cineworld.
Yep.
I was one of 9 people.
Oh, really?
I did a little count. And extraordinarily, I sat in the best seat, top of the stairs.
Yep.
Back row.
at the top of the stairs?
Yes, you've got the stairs in front of you. So, like, your leg room is, like, 25 metres.
I'm with you all the way.
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's almost like the kind of St. John's ambulance seat.
No one at the back. No one behind you bothering you with chewing. I can handle like nachos being eaten in front of me much easier than I can behind.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to know where the nacho sound is coming from.
Nachos at my 6.
Exactly, nachos at my 6.
Nachos
is
at
an
3 o'clock.
Mood.
Hang on a minute, I got nachos at midday. What the frick? I'm eating the nachos. And it is good.
So, Ben, do you mean at the top of the stairs?
I'm not sitting on the stairs.
But like, at the top of the stairs, there's a seat that just looks down the stairs?
Yeah.
Most cinemas don't have that seat, do they?
Of course they do.
Oh, I see.
So what happens to the back row? There's just a bit of oil for no reason.
Okay.
You're showing a lack of business sense, I reckon, here, Henry.
Yeah, of course, because you need to maximise.
Yeah.
So I sat in that seat. I'm loving it. Now, of course, there are 2 seats at the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
With the full 25-metre leg room.
Mm-hmm.
So when one of the other 9 comes in and sits in that seat...
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Are they pre-booked, pre-allotted seats?
They are, yeah.
And they just sat there any... this is shocking.
And then I moved.
No.
Yeah.
What? So, I literally don't understand this. So you got to your seat and someone was sat in it already?
No.
No, you were in your seat and someone sat on you?
I was in my seat.
He's in a nearly empty cinema.
For 2 hours and 40 minutes because that's what British people do.
He's at the back of a nearly empty cinema in a premium spot.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a premium spot next to him.
With his famously long, long, willowy legs. Just stretched out in front of him.
Yeah. And some clown comes in and sits next to him in this almost empty cinema.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Although, isn't that person seeking the same legroom? Because does he have that legroom as well?
Yes, but I've backseat the area. Have I not?
Okay, I like what you're saying. Basically, you came up against yourself.
I did.
A kind of bonger, a double bonger.
The greatest tragedy.
Yeah.
And I did lose, yeah, because I wasn't.
So you conceded to your own double bonger.
Double bonger.
I did.
So where did you go to?
I just moved down maybe three or four seats to the left.
So it was a Mexican standoff between two small-minded pricks.
Yeah. But long-legged.
Small.
So yes, that was me. But Yeah, so it was fine. It was good.
Demographics in the room?
Sorry?
Demographics in the room?
Ooh, it wasn't Silvertops. It was quite a late screening. Started at 8:10. So most of the Silvertops are deep in bed by then.
Yeah.
So I would
They're
say
falling asleep in front of Morse at that point.
Exactly, yeah. So I'd say it was like young, cool, hip somethings.
You're including yourself in that demographic?
Yeah, sort of imagine me, but 9 times.
Okay.
9 bends.
9 bends.
So almost a football team that would do the worst than any football team in league history.
Mainly because I had 9 players.
Is there and a that's goalie?
What you, that's just what you'd say.
What's the setup here? Are we doing 3-3-3 with no goalie? Or are we putting them all at the front?
It's 1-2-3-3.
It's 9 goalies.
Ben, that's the point you'd make all the... All the press conferences. You were saying that, but the fact is
there's 9 of us.
There's only 9 of us.
And one of us is also the manager and one of us is also the physio. What do we manage to do?
But everyone would know it's not just that there's 9 of you. It's a terrible
team. We can never put that to the test.
That's not enough. It's not a sufficient explanation of the performance and the scores. The scores the likes of which the league has never seen before. These are cricket scores.
But still went surprisingly deep in the Europa Conference League, though, didn't you? You were very good against anyone called Spartak for some reason. Okay. So
that was my cinema. I'm trying to coin this cinema. What was it? Cinema context. No, I've even forgotten.
That's one of the great. You know when you got a catchy title, haven't you? When you can't remember it 5 minutes later. That's for sometimes when you know you're onto something.
CCs.
That was my cinema circumstances.
Mm. Ooh, okay, it's improving. It's improving, yeah.
Okay.
Also, I'm going to CC myself into this one with my cinema circumstances as well.
Lovely.
So, recently I've been struggling a bit with booking cinema tickets because, you know, they show you the little map.
Yeah.
Either if you're buying it on the day or if you're buying it online, you get the little map and it's a bit like battleships.
Yeah.
There's all these different circles.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to, but unlike battleships, you're trying to not land on a circle where there is someone else. You're trying to land in between other people. But also you're trying to work out, there are various preferences, aren't there? Like closeness to aisle becomes more and more prevalent. The older you get, you want to get closer to the aisle until eventually you're in the aisle and then eventually you're just in the toilet and your grandson is telling you what's happening in the film live.
On a walkie-talkie.
On a walkie-talkie. Isn't it? That's how it works. So I do like legroom, Ben. I like aisle access. I also, unlike the guy who sat next to you...
I've got the seat for you, Henry.
I massively love not being right next to any other people who I don't know, unless I'm going with someone. I don't want to be... obviously, you don't want to be next to groups or next to couples or next to anyone. Yeah. You want to have some space in between you. Also, what you want is you want to look at screen size. You don't want to be... Front row is... I don't know, when is front row? Is that like when you're like 12, you think it's good, and then you realise it's unwatchable?
You do it once, basically.
Yeah.
I generally trust that the screen is big enough, regardless. I'm never worried about going towards the back, ever.
Yeah.
It's never been a concern.
I think front row is... I think every time... everyone in front row is there for the first and last time. Like, no one goes back to front row. Because you can't see what's going on. The faces are so huge. You just don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But what I've suffered from a couple of times recently is I've thought I'm putting myself in the aisle for maximum pissing.
Just piss down the aisle.
I think I could be pissing for like half, maybe even 3/4 of this entire film. I could be in the toilet if I play my cards right. If I'm that close enough to the aisle and close enough to the little staircase, it leads you down to the spooky cinema toilet. Oh, spooky, that we've talked about before. But what I've done is a few times recently is I've assumed it's a 2-aisler. It's been a 1-aisler. I'm next to the bloody wall. It's impossible for me to piss. I'm down at the other...
Where are the seats on the other side of the...
Yeah.
What are you
booking on a full map of the entire cinema with all the screens?
I've put myself in the car park.
You've got the full architectural floor plans.
I've got the blueprints to this baby.
and I'm booking myself the vents.
We break into the cinema using the vents. If I've learned anything from films, it's the fact that you can break into any building using vents. All buildings have man-sized vents. The more high security the building, the more vents, the more man-sized they are. So essentially,
perfectly lit, but not bulletproof. Be careful.
So imagine that there's a square of all the seats. Yeah. One side is the aisle. The other side is sometimes up against a wall. Sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, so you think there's going to be 2 hours up?
So I put myself
against the walls.
Yeah, I put myself on what I think is the outer extremity, but I'm actually up and literally next to the wall. So I'm going to have to be pissing.
Is this a space you're unfamiliar with? Because where we went, I know this space. To the point where if there's four of us going, I know exactly the four I want.
Yeah.
And some boomers got my four this time.
Oh, no.
Premium four. Top corner, but it's not far in the corner. It's like, it's still fairly central.
Just a little bit
peachy, quite leg roomy.
And was it boomers?
Boomers got in there first.
You know why? Because the boomers, they get access to these things decades before we do. That's why. They've stitched us up, mate. they would have booked that in the 70s, that seat.
Yeah. When they graduated from university, which for them was completely free, they were then given the blueprints to every cinema in Britain.
Every cinema in the country. Yeah,
which we're now paying for.
But then also, you know what? Recently I had an absolute, another classic disaster on these things, which is, I did the classic thing recently. I can't remember if this was theatre or cinema, or possibly maybe going to see like a Polish solo pianist doing some Chopin stuff. That just people just go, it could be anything with me. You just don't know. You know, there's so many, or maybe some jazz or some street jazz or some like Shakespearean jazz, or I don't know what it was, but I was at some sort of event with seating. Doesn't narrow it down. It could be. Yeah.
The waiting room in a police station.
It could have been that. Could be in Argos. Go to Argos about 3 times a week, probably. Often just to pass the time. But I did that thing where you go in and people are doing the thing, obviously, where they're moving to the legs to the side going, oh, sorry. Yeah. And you're going, oh, God, I'm really sorry. And they're going, oh, sorry, everyone's sorry. And you're really, really sorry. And there's this moment where you're looking at your ticket and you're looking at the seats and you're going, here I go, so, really sorry. Everyone's moving, sorry. Can you mind if I come to sorry? And there comes a point where you approach the halfway point of the aisle. And then from then on, you realise that I should have come in from the other aisle. I'm a social pariah. And I had to go, oh, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry. And then I was saying, I'm really sorry. You know what? I should have gone around the other side of the aisle.
So I'm going to go back now and start again and go all the way.
You know what? I'm going to have to start again. I have to go back around again. I'm so sorry.
I won't be able to find my way back out again at the end of the film.
Just to even things out, I'm going to start from A1. I'm going to go all the way through to J7000.
And so that everyone experiences this. So I don't get lost on the way to the toilet. I will need to just hoover these. I've got my own hoover. Don't worry, I'll just hoover up the trail of seats. I will need to relay the trail of seats so I can make it to the toilet. Sorry.
Yeah. So that happened recently. Anyway, my experience for this film was...
Which cinema were you in?
So I went to...
Name your chain?
A cinema in Clapton... Mm. A cool, I think it's maybe even an independent, cool cinema in Clapton. So Clapton is like a trendy East London area. Mm-hmm.
I think I've been there. I think I've been in the bar, though, only. But it's got a nice bar, isn't
it? It's a beautiful, really super cool cinema. The lighting's great. It's kind of arched ceiling. You go into this bar with a big arched kind of ceiling.
Yeah, it's good.
And there's a lovely smell of like caramel, salted caramel popcorn. Oh, yeah. Mm. Craft beers being pulled, served in chilled glasses. It's this kind of thing, right? It's very, very pleasant.
Is this a cinema that was featured in the TV show Starstruck?
I think I saw Starstruck and I wondered if it was the same one. I don't know if it is, but it's got that vibe definitely.
I think it's called the Castle Cinema, maybe, is it? Is that a thing? Anyway, it was a really, really cool place. Mm. So I went in and with my friend, who's a big Dylan fan, and... got myself and him a lovely couple of pints of stout.
Okay. Yeah. A couple of creamers.
Well, exactly. Lovely creamy stouts. Mm-hmm. So stouts is a Guinness type drink, isn't it? So it's a kind of black creamy beer with a lovely big white creamy head on top. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous. And it was a cinema where you can take a pint into the cinema. Mm-hmm. So I think I've ever done that before in my life. I was taking a pint, my friend had his one, and a lovely big wet pint of creamy, liquidy stout in my big hands in a pint glass.
Big wet creamy hands.
Big wet creamy hands. And so I went and I shuffled in Shuffled it. It was one of those quite small.
Slopping your creamy stout all over the laps of the people on row K.
Slopping it about. And like a big incontinent cow with its udders flying left and right, just flopped, just on its way to being slaughtered.
By the way, something being incontinent doesn't mean it lactates all the time.
Thanks for pointing that out for the listeners.
So in the image you just conjured, not only is it lactating everywhere, it's also pissing.
Which, as we've pretty much established, is something that I do pretty much instantly as soon as I go into a cinema. So anyway, I went. The screen was one of those small ones. You know those ones where it's like basically rich man's telly?
Yeah, one
of those ones.
Okay.
Just like a big, probably like Nick Clegg's home cinema room. Okay. It's probably like that scale of experience, which I quite like. This it's like it's just not the Megatron type, not where you'd watch Avatar or something, but for this kind of film, of course. So it's quite small, intimate cinema space. Anyway, there's a lady on the right. I said, "Do you mind if I just squeeze by?" Now, two things you need to know. One is I'm holding a pint, a big liquid pint of bitter. Mm-hmm. Sorry, of stout.
Yeah. A
heavy black liquid, and I'm holding it in what is quite a flimsy thing, which is a glass. Glass is itself a liquid, as we've proved. it's basically liquid in a liquid.
And you're holding mostly it in my left liquid, hand. Aren't you, as well?
Exactly. I'm mainly liquid. So it's all a bit precarious, you could say. The other thing to add in is that it's a Saturday night in Clapton. Cool people wearing their nice clothes. Everyone's kind of dolled up. Lots of couples. People are. It's a nice night out for everyone.
Yeah.
The other thing is,
it's ice white chinos everywhere you look.
It's ice white chinos everywhere you look. Also, it's a very, very cold weather at the moment. So I'm wearing a new coat I bought recently, which is a massively bulky, down-filled sort of puffer coat.
Mm.
So I'm holding a very delicate glass sort of structure, very ceramic, very breakable, and I'm wearing a huge, puffy, sort of, I look like Michelin Man, sort of inflated, massive coat. So anyway, I put the pint down on it. There's a little desk thing between the seats, a little table between the seats. I put it down on that, the pint. Mm-hmm. I then forget about the pint.
Oh, no.
And I start taking off my huge, bulky coat. The next thing we hear is screams. My entire pint, because bearing in mind, it's not my fault because I had forgotten about it. I cannot be held responsible for something I'm not aware of. Also, there was lots of different things going on. I was in Clapton, I was wearing a big, bulky new coat. I've never had a pint in cinema before. There was lots of things that I think a jury will go for.
It was a system overload.
System overload. So what I do with system overload, rather than doing every job I have to do at 75% level, you cancel one job. Forget the pint. Lose it. We focus on the jobs that we have. Do you know what I mean? In the same way that...
Which is
Murdoch,
spinning 180 degrees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in the same way that Murdoch Group tried to load all of the guilt onto the News of the World publication and just sacrifice it.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? That's what I did with the pint. I just forgot about the pint. I cancelled the pint. Started taking my coat off, heard the screams. And basically, I'd knocked my entire pint had channeled directly onto the coat of the woman sat behind me. Mm. The whole pint was gone.
Yeah.
All of it.
Henry, don't stop.
No. Well,
you're
so
much more worried about the pint.
I don't want sympathy
the
for the pint.
The whole pint is gone.
I don't want sympathy for the
that
pint.
Greedy, greedy coat.
Coat was that.
What material is this made from? So mad bringing this into a cinema that has pints.
It sucked up an entire pint.
This would never happen with Gore-Tex. Anyway, so it was just hideously embarrassing. I was so sorry. I mean, I was massively apologetic. There was a lovely couple. Mm. So there's this woman with her lovely coat and her husband. And
it sounds like the sort of place you would turn up in wearing a nice coat to, potentially.
Absolutely. So it was absolutely a nice coat. I was wearing a nice coat. The irony was mine was absolutely dry as a bone after the whole thing.
You wiped clean puffer.
My wipe clean puffer.
Might have been galling.
But the woman next to me was really nice. She ran up and ran and got some bog roll, bought it. I then got on my knees and started mopping up. Lots and lots of apologising.
Mm. You're straining the bog roll into the glass.
See what I can salvage. But then the film started. So there was a kind of a weird thing, which was there was this thing hanging in the air, which was I was saying, like, what can I do? Like, what can you do, really? I mean, I offered to pay for dry cleaning if that was needed. Anyway.
How did that go down?
They were so nice about it.
They just got a free pint. Think of it that way.
Of course. They did.
Yeah. You've been played, kid.
I got played. It's one of the oldest scams in the book, isn't it? You go out wearing a super absorbent coat.
You go out wearing wearing your cousin disguised as a coat.
It's the classic.
Yeah.
Oh, well done. I feel like a fool. Anyway, so the film started with that sort of hanging in the air.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you think it had an impact on the way that you experienced the film? Because was that in your head throughout, or?
You know what?
Because there were quite a lot of coats in the film.
There were quite a lot of coats.
It might have been triggering for you and for that woman. Mm.
I think I was fine in the end. I think Dylan's genius.
Just a little addendum on my cinema circumstances.
Yeah.
Which are related to Henry's cinema circumstances. Mm.
Hang on, were you going out? Did you go out and watch it in Clapton wearing a lovely new coat? go on.
So I was really tired, like really sleepy when I went into the cinema. Mm-hmm. And the reason was, the day before I'd seen Henry Packer, me and him had spent time together.
Yeah.
And he'd talked about his big down coat.
Oh. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was talking, and I also myself need a down coat. That's coming up for me.
Yeah.
And Henry talks about having to do a bit of research into it, getting deep into that. And then I went home and then stayed up until 4:30 a.m. researching sort of down coats.
So my down coat has done so much damage.
You gave me that kind of, there's some kind of mental virus that meant that I set up really late.
Can I say, when you start looking for down coats, it's never ending because no down coat kind of ticks all the boxes quite. So it's an absolute wormhole. Yeah.
So I was deep in that wormhole. So I got up, I was really groggy, I felt awful all day. And then went to the cinema, I was really tired. And I think it probably did colour how I experienced the thing because I was just feeling quite...
Well, you'd been got by, you know... Golly, the coat is the absolute nemesis to this film, isn't it? Let's hope it's mischief is just contained to people trying watching this film and it's not.
Yeah.
It's true. And actually, a lot of the time I thought Bob Dylan looked like he needed a good down coat in this film. Didn't he?
It's a bit cold, isn't it, you mean?
I was just trying to create a link, Ben. We're supposed to be a team, aren't we?
But it was such a tenuous link, I couldn't let it go by.
It was so tenuous.
You sort of poured through it like a bit of spider's web or something like that, didn't you? Yeah.
Can I just quickly grab a cup of tea now that we're about to talk about the film?
I'm going to get a second German beer that tastes of coins, or maybe this one won't taste
of coins. Okay, let's refresh.
Okay.
Yeah, nice one.
It's time for the intermission.
Lovely stuff.
Welcome to the Three Bean Salad Cinema. During this intermission, if you'd like hot or cold snacks or hot or cold drinks, please make your way to the lobby where you'll be served by a sullen teenager.
Well, here we are. We're here to talk about A Complete Unknown, the new Bob Dylan biopic.
I might start by saying the obvious complimentary thing.
Which is that Chalamet's doing a good job.
I thought he did a really, really ruddy excellent job.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he's really, really, really ruddy good.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm not really putting my neck on the line there, necessarily. Because I've seen him do stuff before. I've seen him do his King Henry and I've seen him do his Dune action. And he does the biz, and he's good, and he looks at what's that?
What's King Henry?
It's your biopic, Henry.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet was in the Henry Packer story, and I've not heard about it.
He was, yeah.
I've got to.
I'm going to have to look at what they actually called the film. But he's really bloody good. He's even better than I thought he was.
I think the moment you realise he's really good is when he, quite early on, he plays a song for, what's his face? Woody Guthrie.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's the first time you see him kind of sing and play and do the kind of Bob Dylan thing.
Mm. Yeah.
And at that moment you think, oh, this could be, if this isn't right, this is going to be a really bad film.
The handsome, my friend, is blowing in the wind. And it's probably blowing in the wind.
If they've got Sting to do it, for example.
That's my Sting.
And that's he put himself forwards.
But you can see it's on
if
the internet.
If we can get hold of that audition tape, that would Sting. Be.
It's on the internet. It's on the dark web.
Roxanne! I didn't have to turn on the red light.
He didn't even write that. He didn't even say you wrote that song, babe.
But he had many fierces.
So that's true. Very, very good.
So it feels like brilliant. he nails the first song and you go, okay, he's going to be able to do Bob Dylan and it not be eggy and terrible.
Yeah.
And you kind of relax and then he's great, I think. Yeah.
Here we go. It was just called The King.
What was that about? Film?
Henry V, like leading up to Agincourt.
Oh, he played Henry V?
Mm. Yeah. A young scrappy.
Great, 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 great,
Henry. Yes.
I think you're certainly right, Mike. The thing that loomed hard for me in the film is it began and then seconds in, I went, oh, yeah, I don't like musical biopics.
Ah.
What am I doing here?
I'm knackered.
I'm knackered.
All I can see is every time I blink, I see down coats floating around.
Different levels of fill.
Right? That's what I can think about.
Is that the unit of the down? Do they have their own tog?
There's loads of different units.
It's the amount of fill.
The amount of fill, but also there's two types of down in a down coat. There's the down and feather.
And the feather, yeah.
And there's a kind of milligram, and then there's something per something.
Yeah.
It's one of those annoying things where, you know, when you're trying to compare food in a supermarket, stuff to do with weights of food and price and stuff, and they're never in the same measurement, so you can't... That's what happens with down coats.
But this wouldn't have been helped by the fact that I think when he first arrives in New York, it's obviously quite a cold day.
Yes, exactly. That was the point I was trying to make earlier, in a way. Okay, so Ben, I'm gonna come in here and say that I agree with you, and I think I'm on the record of saying that I have problems with the music biopic as a genre. It's a difficult genre.
It's a difficult genre. Well, it's not a natural music biopic story necessarily, is there?
No,
because it's not like it doesn't hit the usual sort of story rhythms necessarily, especially this one where it's just like he's doing really well and he continues to do really well.
Yeah.
And it pisses some people off, but not everyone's pissed off at the end. And we know he's fine afterwards, and it's a constant upwards trajectory.
Yes, there's no... there's no heist, essentially, is what you're saying.
There's no heist, and he's not particularly... Like, he is the central character, is not particularly worried about the heartbreak he's causing to his
two
lovers.
He also never gets
tied
to... I don't think there's a single laser in the whole film.
No.
And he's never tied to anything.
No, it was very much BYO laser. And they warned us of that.
It's quite hard to generate drama.
In Exeter, yeah.
So what I want to say is that I thought the film was actually quite good, but the moments that were biopic-y, I didn't like. And I when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is the moment I don't like in a biopic. And it's this moment, right? And it happens a few times in the film.
Can I make a guess? I'm not going to
please
steal your moment, but I just want to make a guess of what it is.
Please make a guess.
Is it shots of people's faces while they're listening to Bob Dylan?
Yeah, so it's people realising that he's really, really good.
Yes, exactly.
So it happens quite a lot. Okay, the worst one is he's in his flat and he plays something for his kind of on and off girlfriend, Joan Baez. Yeah. And it's her kind of having to go like, what? This?
Ben, can you do the singing? I'll do what people do.
Okay. The answer, my friend.
Someone walks into the bar. In the
wind. Yeah, so anyway, things about the 60s and stuff. Blowing in the wind. hang on. This is quite... I quite like this. Yeah. I quite like this song.
But can I say, I've had that thought, Ben, which is, if that was me, because if people walk into these little basement bars where he's playing, if that was me, so you get a shot of something, they come in, and they go,
what?
Yeah. And if that was me, I would just walk in and go, oh, I don't fancy this. I'm looking for a place where you can have a conversation.
I'm fundamentally looking for someone to plug in my phone, to be honest.
So is this part of a quiz, or is it... is it
have you got...
Shall we... what have you got on tap? What have you got on tap? Don't worry, it's fine.
Do you do scampi fries?
They're just kind of spoons.
It's quite hard to explain, but scampi is a kind of fictional, it's a kind of semi-fictional fish. And we've designed a kind of crunchy way of... No, you carry on singing, mate. Yeah. I just sort of turned on my heel and got... I wouldn't have spotted the genius. Because for me, it takes at least three listens to any song for me to like it.
Okay.
And that's why I struggle to get into new music, because I'm like, if I hear a song for the first time, I'm like, I don't know if I like this yet. It's going to take three listens. I can't be asked. There are songs that I know I already like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't say, so I wouldn't first
I
time.
I agree, but I would say that I think live, that shortens for me. So
yeah,
I think when you see someone live and they're shit hot, you do go, bloody hell, okay, this guy's great.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But it's the fact that that happens in this film so many times, because every time someone comes across him, they have the same thing. So
yeah.
Pete Seeger,
at some point there should have been some warning, right? You know, I mean, the guys in the studio, someone should have warned them. He's pretty good. I mean, that's why he's here.
Maybe it happened in real life, but there's something about watching a film where they have to sort of dramatize it like 10 times.
It's one of the flaws. I think this is one of the flaws of the music biopic, I think, is you have to have these moments. It's a kind of weirdly non-film. I don't know. It's like, it's kind of unsatisfying moment for some reason, which is someone's playing music and you zoom in on someone's face and they have to do face acting of going, this is a really good song. It's just kind of, and that happens repeatedly, doesn't it?
But also I wonder, there's something in there, isn't there, which is a bit smug, which is the film is kind of saying, right, you know Bob Dylan's a genius already because you live in 2025.
Yeah.
But all these idiots in the film, they've never seen him before. Imagine what it'd be like if you saw Bob Dylan for the first time.
Yeah, and also they don't know that a down coat could be designed with a breathable and waterproof sort of fabric. None of them know that.
They don't even know about a Velcro storm strap.
And Bob Dylan was a visionary in his lyrics, but he never saw that coming, did he?
So, no, Mike, did that bother you as much as it bothered me and Henry? Because I found it did bother me.
No, I have something else in biopics that I realise bothers me.
Yeah.
And it's always unnecessary, and it was monumentally unnecessary in this film, which is the moment where they can't resist. And we're still not ready. The technology is amazing in the world, right? What we're doing is extraordinary, but we're still
not quite up to it.
Oh,
I know exactly what you're about to say.
Putting someone's, an actor's face in the middle of some historical footage.
Oh!
And they do it. And it's egregious. It's egregious because for me, I was quite engrossed in the film. It's just like I'd just been slapped across the face with a grand piano. It just looks ridiculous.
That was such a bum step. So just to explain,
they sort of Photoshop Chalamet into a photo from, maybe is it the Washington March, where like he's like a Martin Luther King
type speech. So it's a real bit of news footage with Bob Dylan in it. And they put his face. You're right, Mike. It completely.
I don't need it.
Sort of ruins the illusion, which is because you're going along with the illusion, but then that kind of. Somehow. And
I think even if we get to the point where filmmakers can do that perfectly, I think it's still going to be weird
because Timothy Chalamet wasn't there.
Yeah, unless you remake it with an actor playing Martin Luther King, that's fine. But don't put the actual. It's too jarring.
It doesn't make sense.
So to explain, if people don't know what we're talking about, basically this film is about the first years of Bob Dylan. So it starts with him arriving in New York and sort of establishing himself as an exciting folk singer. And then throughout, he gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's a bit of conflict really between the folk scene, who want him to keep doing political plinky plonky songs, and what he wants to do, which is slightly more bluesy electric songs.
It's the famous Newport Folk Festival incident that Bob Dylan goes electric.
But that's some people think actually happened at the Manchester Free Trade Hall, by the way.
So the person shouting Judas happened in Manchester, and they've put it into this.
As in Manchester, England, or Manchester?
Manchester, England, yeah.
Free Trade Hall, which is where various legendary things happen in music,
But that's the whole film, basically. And then he does a performance at the end where he does do the electric performance. Lots of people boo, but ultimately he's done what he wants to do, and we all know that he's going to go on to be Bob Dylan, the megastar. And that's the film.
Chalamet does a great job.
Yeah.
There's very little... I really loved it, but I think if you don't like biopics, it's a very good biopic.
Yeah,
there's not much to criticize. I found myself, the only thing I was a bit confused by really was Pete Seeger's house, because he stays in Pete Seeger's quite early on. He goes
sort
to see
wood cabin.
Yeah, he goes to stay in Pete Seeger's house. He lives in this absolutely enormous sort of wooden cabin in the middle of God knows where, with his wife or partner and a few kids. But when they go to bed, they're all going to sleep in the same room. There's just one tiny room, and they're all sleeping on sofas and weird little bunks and sort of mezzanines, sort of draping children over
bits of wooden ladder. Odd. So where's the rest of the house? It's really weird. So it's like the reverse TARDIS effect. Cabin.
Bob Seger, I gather from the film, was kind of like a previous generation, old-timey kind of traditional music.
Is it not Pete Seeger?
Pete Seeger.
So Bob Seeger is a different singer.
Okay, sorry. And played very well by Edward...
Norton.
Norton. Yeah. Pete Seeger, really well.
For me, is the best thing in the film.
Like he's really good.
He's this kind of old time. I just want everyone to have a nice time.
He has a bit of a journey, doesn't he? He has a bit of a,
He's a really sweet kind of guy, isn't he?
He's got a lovely, absolutely lovely collection of jumpers.
He's a lovely beautiful jumpers. Collection of jumpers, which he wears boldly in any environment, be it hippie, be it asylum, wherever he may be, and it just works.
And what I liked about this film the most, because I, unlike you, Mike, I didn't love the film. I thought it was fine. What I enjoyed was it sent me home and then I hit the internet.
Yeah.
And it was like fucking Minority Report. I just had everything in front of me where I looked up what's real, what happened, what didn't happen.
Yeah, I know.
And I found a lot of photographs.
Who was Bob Newhouse?
And all of those Pete Seeger jumpers are based on photographs. They've recreated original 60s Pete Seeger jumpers.
Nice.
And that for me was the pinnacle of the whole film.
It felt very visually, lovingly accurate. Like,
totally.
It looked great. It felt like they'd really recreated the 60s really well and like the grotty flats and stuff he was in. And let's, I just want to quickly come back to Chalamet's performance. So Chalamet is really great, does the singing really well. But this is one of my other issues with music biopics is this thing happens in music biopics, which is the actors. The actor's basically singing as well as the person. So at the moment, they're saying the same thing. Angelina Jolie sings as well as Maria Callas. So basically, what you're doing is destroying the legacy of a great artist. You're completely pissing on the legacy of a great artist, aren't you? Because you're someone from a completely different discipline who's done like 3 months' work, and now you can sing as well as the person. You know what I mean? It's like, stop it. Yeah. If you can, that's sort of monstrous.
I understand what you're saying, but stop doing that.
Stop singing as well as the person.
I think in the case of Bob Dylan, he's the one where it's fine, because Bob Dylan isn't thought of as an amazing singer. He's got this kind of incredible style that he does.
Yes, it's the lyrics.
It's not Maria Callas, though. You know, it's
That's true, because he's not. He doesn't have a good voice, in sort of inverted commas, as he doesn't have a sort of traditionally good voice.
No, I mean, it obviously is good, but yeah.
But also, I find that a bit odd about the film. No one pointed out the voice. Everyone's going genius.
Yes,
but isn't normally your first experience of Dylan is really weird voice? Whoa! Oh my God, this is horrible. Can someone?
But
else?
Isn't that a and then you start thing. To love they, it. Isn't that why? Like, so Joan Baez, did the actor who played Joan Baez did she do her own singing as
she
well?
She did, yeah. Yeah, everyone did their own singing.
She was great. So she's got a pretty amazing voice then. Yeah. I mean, that's a set of pipes right there. But that was a thing, wasn't it? That she
destroying the legacy of another great artist.
Super trained voice
an
and was amazing.
Coming on for a different her voice is too pretty. The great artist.
Yeah.
Thanks. Nice one, guys.
Mike, you're right. So in the early days, like, she would sing Blowing in the Wind.
She would have stood. She'd have been the one that stood out in the folk scene because she had a properly trained.
And it's very voice. Sort of. But his voice actually.
Whereas most
has,
of them were like just. They just sang. No one had taught them how to. No one had taught them how to sing. They were just self sufficient.
But like us with podcasting, raw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing is in the film. So what I felt was that the film. So this is the thing which. Mike was alluding to that, but as a music biopic has to sort of find or try to reach for some sort of narrative structure within the chaos of a real life. And so I thought various tropes get reached for in these films, and sure enough, that happened in this film. So things like, so sort of various filmic Hollywood tropes I felt were in there. So you've got like the old master, which is Woody Guthrie, who visits at the beginning and comes back to repeatedly, who's like the kind of, his sort of guru. You've got a classic of the genre is the sort of rapacious manager.
Yes.
Who's like a money person who's sort of, not very likable.
The too famous for normal life revelation moment.
Yes. When he's in a bar and everyone sees that it's Bob Dylan and they start going mad and he has to go home.
Yes. Yeah. Also, another kind of just a I think they just try to play a kind of love triangle essentially, which may have some truth in it, I guess. But like that I felt it was just reaching for these different tropes. You've got this love triangle where, and this was another moment which I thought was overdone, which is you've got the person watching the musician play and their face going mad for how genius what the listener is. The other one which we had twice in this film was woman watching Bob Dylan singing, her face showing lots of emotions because she's realizing that their love will end one day because of the way he's singing it, slash the lyrics, slash the fact that he's on stage with another woman. That happened
and he,
twice.
And he is cheating on her.
And the fact that he is cheating on her.
And the flashbacks of sex.
Yeah. But do you know what I mean? I felt that was a bit, especially the second time round, she had to do even more emotion in her face of kind of biting her lip.
And then running off. Punishment me. And then running. Little Muggins, here I am again.
Yeah.
On that scene, I was literally imagining like the set and the director sort of going like, can you just do some face for me? Can you do some face?
Yeah. Can you stick in a few more face emotions, please?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, we need to cut to your face, and you need to be doing something. So can you just
basically
really...
going to be all your face, like big IMAX. This basically, might go on IMAX.
The writers have realised that there isn't a third act within this film. So they've tried to go for a five-act structure, but they haven't managed to sort out the third act. So if your face can structurally presage
can
the
be
rest
a one-act
film,
play.
Can be a one-act play, if possible. Yeah, we it's quite a load-bearing face, isn't
it?
In
it's fair to say that her face had to do some heavy lifting.
It had to do some really, really heavy lifting.
She put the work in. Fair play to her, absolutely.
In that moment. And also, I thought that was a little bit absurd. And also, the final scene was kind of absurd because it was kind of like a farce where they were trying to bring all these strands together. He's playing at the Newport Jazz not Jazz Festival. he's playing at the Newport Folk Fest, whatever it is. Yeah. He's going electric.
Yeah.
But they're trying to bring all these strands together. So it's kind of like slightly farcical stuff happening behind the scenes where, like,
it's a lot of people.
Guy's kind of picking up an axe.
Yeah, someone's picking up an axe. Bob Seger's running around and they're like, his girlfriend's jumping in
all the
car.
Segers.
They're different.
Tim Seger.
It's different. There's a whole kind of mistaken identity thing with
the
Seegers going
the
on.
The lanyard people have really messed up. And that's who this film is really about.
And was it Pete Seeger? And then there's a point where Pete Seeger's wife, who's kind of been a character, but
yes, what,
a little
yes, what
bit, she's
on?
Doing things with her face that are to do with the fact that he's gone
she
electric.
She was given not a lot to work with, but told to do a lot of work with it.
Wasn't yes.
She? And again, I mean, fair play to her. She did a great job.
The faces are having to do a lot of structural. Johnny Cash is running around, storming in or out. And then there's a bit where Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
Mr. Seeger
at one point thinks maybe he's going to unplug the whole thing. And it becomes this kind of, oh, is he going to unplug it? He's going to like ruin the concert. You're like, it kind of like, I felt that moment was, well, kind so, of like slightly.
So it gets this last moment where Dylan goes electric and he brings his band on and they're playing electric guitars and the crowd are booing to a kind of insane extent.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, this feels really phony to me because like, even if they don't like it, like the boos aren't going to be that pronounced.
It's rude, yeah.
And people are throwing stuff, and it seems a bit.
It's rude and it's preventable because if you really don't want the electric stuff, don't have the amps on stage for the love of God. What are you doing? Do you know what I mean? It's quite easy to prevent.
Though, yeah. I then got home, and this is what I liked about this film.
Is it true that bit?
Yeah, it sent me on like a YouTube odyssey, which I enjoyed more than the film, where I watched the footage of it.
Yeah.
And people are booing the loudest I've ever heard anyone boo.
Wow.
And actually, it's kind of like it is in the film. And so when I was watching the film, I was like, oh, this feels like they're really over-egging this.
Yeah.
But it's true. So, and it made me think...
Throwing stuff at the stage.
It made me think, actually, in so many of these films, at the end, maybe over the credits, they'll kind of show the real version as if to go, you know, we actually were faithful to this. And I think this film could have done with it, to be honest, because...
That's a good point.
There are so many bits where you go, that's a bit much. And then actually, if you sort of go on YouTube, it's all real and it looks exactly the same as that.
That's a good point, because I felt the film didn't actually, like, establish the stakes. I think it felt a bit like, who cares, it's just like a random festival. I mean, it's like...
Because the stakes are for someone else, right?
But that's it, because Bob himself doesn't care.
Okay,
which is the problem, isn't it?
But they did care a lot.
Pete Seeger cared, and the guy who
and Bob Seeger, all the Seegers, little Jimmy Seeger,
and all the Seeger, Mrs. Seeger, Saddleman Seeger, they were all really stressed about it.
Colonel
Seeger. It was their thing, you know, their festival.
Yeah. And the Seegertron 9000, that's the Seeger of the future.
Yeah, so just to explain, basically, there's Pete Seeger is this old folky, and there's all these other old folkies, and they want to keep the festival as a kind of very straight down the line celebration of traditional music.
Ben, can I just point out, he did it on the way, he'd done it before, I think, is important.
He did it the previous year.
He'd done it, and they'd loved him, that helped launch him, and then it was seen as a betrayal. when he went back. It would be like us going to Macfest doing three bean pod salad, three bean pod salad live, and not doing the crab book section,
or going acoustic,
going,
doing the crab book section.
Yeah,
and yeah, so he returns and he's playing his electric guitars, and basically the people who care are the people who run the festival. So that's Pete Seeger, his mate with the slightly ropey beard, and the other guys.
Yeah.
And Bob Dylan fundamentally doesn't really give a shit.
Yes.
And I think this is a problem with the film because
he's emotionally varnished against the whole thing and against the love stories and everything.
Yeah, the person you're sort of following doesn't care. Yeah. And the people who do care are these minor characters who you don't really care about.
That's true.
He even arrives knowing that he's really good.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
What, in New York at the beginning?
Yeah, it's not like it's like, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Yes.
He knows he's brilliant. It's just an issue of, you know,
logistics.
Logistics. And then very quickly, the first person he plays to, he manages to get to, you know, two really, it's two national treasures of folk music. And they're like, you're brilliant. And then we'll get you in this night in about a month. And then all the people who can actually record your albums, will they'll agree you're brilliant. And then,
and it reminded me of Peter Kay's autobiography, which was bought for me by my grandmother 15 years ago. Because she went, you're into comedy, you're like this.
That's a Christmas really Day. A sweetly misjudged present.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in the nicest possible way.
Totally. So, and I read it because she bought it for me.
Yeah.
And it's a mad book. Because, right. And I don't particularly dislike Peter Kay for any reason, but it's just him. He's always been funny. He starts comedy, does his first gig, smashes it. They go, right, you're amazing. Yeah. You should come and do our Saturday night. He does Saturday night, smashes it, then does a tour, smashes it.
Wow. Yeah.
And his book is just him smashing gigs across the country and then being on telly or whatever.
Yeah.
And this film's a bit like that in that, you know, he's just amazing.
That's a good point.
And everyone who sees him thinks he's amazing. And he is amazing.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, there's never a moment of
it's a life worth making films about. Maybe it's better off being a doc rather than a biopic.
But Mike, you really enjoyed it.
I genuinely did enjoy it.
I feel like I sort of enjoyed it for the wrong reasons. Like I just enjoyed being in the 60s. That was fun, you know?
I enjoyed the visual feast of the 60s. I think it might sound tosserish. I genuinely just really, I loved Chalamet. His performance.
You fell in love with Chalamet.
Chalamet was superb.
I couldn't take my eyes off him, but yeah.
Well, he was on the screen the whole time, almost. He'd had to make a real
effort. You were meant to be watching him.
Yeah, but I'm on the phone.
Yeah.
It's called roadblocks.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I think I'm awesome with you. And I kind of, basically, I think it isn't a good film.
Oh.
But I just think it isn't, because I just sort of feel it's become slightly point, like, I just think like most music biopics is a bit pointless. And it turns into a kind of like, it just gets a bit repetitive as well. Just constantly hearing these little snippets of really great Bob Dylan songs.
Yeah.
Watching people react to it.
It can be frustrating when they feel obliged to shorten a song, but play it.
Which they do all the time. He's constantly finishing songs, in fact, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He'll do the song, they'll massively shorten it, or finish it. Mind you, his songs are quite long. In real life, his songs, they're like quite enough, like 4 or 5 minutes long.
I suppose the music biopic, they run the risk of being like a bad jukebox musical.
It's a bit jukeboxy.
This pre-sold franchise, this thing that's loved, that'll be good enough, is a risk. But I did. I was into it.
But I still kind of enjoyed it, because I enjoyed hearing the songs. I enjoyed Chalamet, I enjoyed the 60s recreation. Yeah. I just think like as a film, it didn't do anything, because it did, and I think you're shackled by being a music biopic. What can it do as a piece of storytelling that is useful or enlightening? Because you don't really learn anything from it, I don't think particularly. And actually, one slight thing which frustrated me initially about it was that you don't, it doesn't really teach you anything about, because he turns up in New York City as this fully formed weird genius guy. So you don't actually learn anything, like how did he become that person? That's what fascinates me, is how did he become that person? What how did he create that? Because I think it was sort of created slightly, that persona.
Will you allow me to be very, very pseudo about this whole thing?
Do it.
Yeah, go on.
The whole thing is a kind of meta commentary.
Is it a jeu de miroir?
It is, isn't it? Mirrors within mirrors, on top of French people under mirrors.
But the whole film is, because Bob Dylan, right, is unknowable, because as you say, he created his own mythos.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, we don't really know where he came from. And he's hard to know, both as a fan and it, I think probably, you know, as a girlfriend or as a person in the 60s. He's impossible to know. And the film's called The Complete Unknown for that reason, right? It's not just a lyric. It's like, he's this unknowable, weird force. Mm-hmm. And the filmmaker had a decision to make, which was, do I try and make the film make you feel like you have got to know him at all, a little bit, you learn a bit about him and you maybe get a sense of what's driving this guy? Or do you go, that's impossible because that's not what Bob Dylan is. And you're going to continue to be alienated from him as this kind of cool alien, basically.
Yeah.
And they went for cool alien.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the correct decision, because I think that is the essence of the man, but it leads to a slightly cold fish of a film.
The man is Mystique. Yeah, because they mention, like, I mean, if it was just a film, there's stuff they mention that sounds like quite fun and teasing, like his sort of unreliable narrator. I used to wee at the carnival. I learnt these chords from a cowboy. Yeah. All this, I mean, if it was a film, then something from his past would come back and... Yeah, he'd turn out he'd been responsible for a chemical spill in the Ozarks and wiped out a species of rare hairy frog or something. Do you know what I mean? And then it's those things mashing up together. Yeah. But it's not.
And also, you'd have him as a kid with some wind blowing on him.
Yes. Yes. What were the answers to a math test blowing into his face?
The answers to math test. And the teacher would say to him, "You'll never write a song called Blowing in the Wind." you want some of those arcs, don't you, ideally?
No, but like that film could have been made, and that would have been a...
That's true, but then that kind of begs the question of why make the film. I literally don't know a reason for that.
Well, yeah, because
I can't think of a reason for that film. Why make that? Because he has his Mystique at the beginning, he retains it at the end, so just listen to the music, guys. No, but the film is good because it points people towards the music, which is a good thing.
Wonger and gongs, Henry, Wonger and gongs.
Wonger and gongs, Wonger and gongs, Wonger and gongs.
Yeah.
Can I say something I've enjoyed? I went to you can go on Spotify now to the soundtrack of A Complete Unknown. I've quite enjoyed this, looking at it. It has all the songs listed. Highway Revisited, 61 Revisited by Timothy Chalamet. Mr. Tambourine Man. That's the famous song by Timothy Chalamet. Girl from the North Country, that's the famous song by Timothy Chalamet. We've also got Timothy Chalamet's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. another thing that I found paradoxical or a bit weirdly alienating about the film was that it's just like Timothy Chalamet, he's absolutely brilliant, right? He's really brilliant. But almost like the more he was brilliant, the more I was like, oh my god, that's Timothy Chalamet, I can't believe. Like, you know, like the closer he sounded to Bob Dylan, it was like, that is amazing because that's Timothy Chalamet. I could Chalamet, like, I was speaking in tongues.
It's like you're pouring pints over people just going,
like, that's the kind of paradox of it, is the more close to Bob Dylan is, the more it's like, this is Timothy fucking Chalamet, my Christ, how is he doing that? Because Timothy, it's not Bob Dylan.
He can ride a motorbike as well, I don't believe it.
So, final thoughts then, I guess. We're coming to the end. We normally finish by saying sort of like, sort of an out of 10 or an out of something being rating. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but it's not a bad time by any means.
I think for me, it's a great performance adorns a TV quality film.
Ooh!
Christmas. Three hot beans.
Okay. Out of how many beans?
Out of five beans.
Okay.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I similarly am a bit wary of musical biopics on the whole. I enjoyed it more than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
That's even though, bear in mind also, I'm an absolute plot hound. You know me. I love a plot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Give me my heists, my murders, give me my twists. But despite that, I enjoyed it. I'm going to give it four hot beans.
Okay.
Four hot beans.
I'm going to give it three hot beans.
Okay.
It's really worth seeing. It's not dramatic particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And informing this is another film I saw this week, which is called A Real Pain, written and directed by Jesse Eisenberg. which was really great writing.
Yeah.
Really dramatic, but quite low key. And I really enjoyed it. And that was like, oh, that's what cinema should be like. And then the Dylan one is like worth seeing because it's fun, because the music's good and it feels like you're in the 60s, and the, it kind of gets you back into that period, and you can then go home and do some deep dive YouTubing, which is what I did and enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it's great. So I'm going to give it 3 hot beans.
Okay.
Also, I think I can wrap up this section of the show quite quickly and easily. I think we'll all agree. Plemons Tenshaw, Johnny Cash.
Yes.
Yes, please.
Although, to be fair, the guy who played Johnny Cash was really good.
He was great, wasn't he?
Yeah. In fact, all the acting's brilliant.
Yeah.
And would I put Plemons in it? The acting's also good.
Yeah. He could have just been one of the people booing at the...
Plemons, yeah. Yeah. He, at the festival. He would have... I mean...
Where's Mike gone?
No, Mike's... Mike's having his kind of going electric moment. He's trying something radical now.
I'm on the cusp of an
I'm hoping he's going to pick up a guitar.
Is he fishing out an original Bob Dylan?
I'm on the cusp of an acoustic laptop. I just realised it was nearly out of batteries and it's not plugged in.
Oh, nice.
I was really hoping you were going to put out a guitar and start singing Blowing in the Wind.
Plemons... I don't know. I was going to say that he might know what to do about the being that person who's got to sit on the grass knowing that you're going to be dumped by Bob Dylan twice, but I think the actor that did it, she did a fine job as anyone can do.
Yeah, frankly. She was great. Maybe a film that doesn't need Plemons. Maybe our first.
Or maybe Plemons would add what we needed somehow, do you know what I mean? He'd incorporate some plots and some twists. And
I don't think every film needs Plemons, and I think this film, acting-wise, did fine. Actually, I'm taking it back. Newsreader telling you about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
There we go.
Of course.
Yes. Perfect role.
Yeah.
There's always a place for Plemons.
Yeah. What a relief.
That's why it's such a dependable format point.
Well, there we go. Any thoughts you weren't able to air, please go ahead. But I think that's... I'm going to bring things to a close.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And for your continuing support.
Indeed. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.